For those of you tuning in today, we've switched this podcast from Salesforce for Everyone to Homesteading for Everyone, apparently. Hi, I'm Anita Smith.
I'm Bradley Rice.
And you're listening to the Salesforce for Everyone podcast.
In today's show, Brad reflects on how to forge high-quality connections online.
At this point, he could say, hey, Brad, I need help with XYZ, and I would take my time out to help him out, and that's gone both ways.
Also, our guest talks about the merits of not caring what people think.
I don't care if someone goes and looks at a post and is like, wow, Jordan's got all these followers and only got 20 likes. It's like, yeah, I'm willing to fail.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Salesforce for Everyone podcast. In today's episode, we're going to have yet another guest on. And if you are interested in becoming a Salesforce freelancer, maybe even starting your own consultancy, or just better understanding what it is that Salesforce customers need in their businesses and how really intelligent consultants go about helping businesses become better with Salesforce, this is going to be the episode for you. And with me today to help cover this topic, as always, is Anita Smith. How's it going, Anita?
Hey, going pretty good. I spent the morning watching these hawks build a nest in one of my pine trees. I don't know what happened, at what age this happens, but as you grow old, something happens and you all of a sudden become a bird watcher. Like you can name birds. Like this is a really cool app called Merlin Bird ID that like you can hit record and it'll live tell you what bird's making the sound. I'm going on a real tangent here, but I'm just saying watching hawks build nests in a pine tree is pretty cool. We might take the drone up later to get a closer look. How's it going with you?
It's so funny. Things are good. I have seen that a lot. I've seen that. I've heard many times that as you age, you automatically become a bird watcher, which is pretty funny. We have a love-hate relationship with hawks because we have chickens. And so it's sort of our job to make sure that there aren't any hawks around, but there's not a whole lot you can do about it other than try to distract them somewhere else or scare them off with like things. But we did find this has worked so far. We've had a lot of people tell us about hacks that just don't work, but we did end up getting 3 black chickens. And apparently hawks don't like crows and they see them as too similar to a crow. And it's true. Ever since we got those chickens, the hawks have not bothered the flock anymore. So it's actually pretty cool. I don't know if it's just coincidence, but it worked. So I'll take it.
Oh, that's way better than where I thought it was going to go, that hawks are racist or something. I saw on the internet or like on my Instagram feed, you know, those inflatable wobbly guys, the air that yeah. Those are supposed to.
That's what I had heard too. I did not try it. I'm betting that would probably work because that's pretty wild. But I also like the vibe of our yard not having those in it, right? So it's a really nice sort of appeal when you go outside and the chickens are doing their thing and you go collect the eggs and there's not this big thing just like flapping its arms through there. So we tried to avoid that alternative, but I will keep it in mind.
For those of you tuning in today, we've switched this podcast from Salesforce for Everyone to Homesteading for Everyone, apparently.
That's right. We're going to give our pro tips. Who needs a guest anyway?
Our guest is so confused right now. So let's just go ahead and introduce him. We have a very special guest. I've kind of known about him through my whole career. He has a huge following on LinkedIn. You probably have heard of him too if you're in the ecosystem. Welcome to the show, Jordan Nelson.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Yeah, I'm good. How about yourself?
Yeah, doing well. I was trying to quickly think on my toes here. Okay, what's a bird story I have in mind that I can kick this off with? Unfortunately, I couldn't think of one real quick. So I'm not sure how we're going to kind of parlay into that opener for me here.
I think that's okay. I think that's an understandable situation. Yeah, I'll piggyback off of what Anita said there. And that for those of you who do not know Jordan, he has been in the Salesforce ecosystem for, I don't dare to say how long. It's a long time. But a lot of people early on knew Jordan, myself included, as the LinkedIn like social media guru. This guy could get thousands of followers in what seemed like overnight. And of course, we know that, you know, that's never true. But he just had a way of communicating with people. He had a way of connecting with people. And people were drawn to the things that he was talking about and sharing. And that has grown immensely over time. But what I will say is that a lot of times, people that I've talked to get caught up in Jordan, the social media expert, right? But I would say that I now know Jordan best as a Salesforce consulting expert. He has started his own consultancy, Simple Salesforce, and has had a ton of success with that. He's had a ton of success in his own Salesforce career, moving through startups and different roles and having a lot of success with helping those companies. So Jordan, if you don't mind, you know, give us a rundown of, I guess, your Salesforce career. How did you get into Salesforce and sort of where did you come from? And then what has that journey been like? I know it might take a little while to go through that, but I think it's really important to understand your background for the listeners to understand where you are today.
Yeah, for sure. So before Salesforce started for me, I was actually more into like a call center environment. And then I also started my own business at that time too, right out of college. So I had this vinyl wrap shop going for a little bit, had some employees there. So I had a little bit of background, I guess, right off the bat with how to start a business, what that was like, what it would require. And I think that really played into some of those strengths that you saw later on once Salesforce came around with, you know, how do I run social media? How do I put myself out there? I was already kind of doing all of that since I had to for the business that I was trying to run. So some of that stuff played in nicely to where I'm at today. But yeah, I really made that switch pretty early on when I met somebody at this call center I was working at. We had a Salesforce team over there as well that covered this company I worked for. It was Walmart e-commerce at the time. And I remember talking with him. I was just about to get married at that time. I was 24 or so. And I just was kind of trying to figure out like what I was going to do, panicking a little bit about the career path I was going to go down, in all honesty. So talking with him, what I loved about it was honestly the structure side of it. I loved that he was like, oh yeah, like you can start here as an admin and there's all these different places that you can go. So made the leap, did a lot of Trailhead at that time, applied to a ton of different jobs, and I was able to land one locally here in my state where I'm still at, is Utah, with a local tech company, which was awesome. So got my start there. And then, yeah, it really just kind of continued to progress. I think I got really lucky on my first job where I had like an architect there. We had a couple developers. We had, you know, a well built out team. So I was kind of like just this junior guy coming in. And made it really nice for me to get up some guardrails right off the bat and also understand like the paths again, right? Like I could see somebody working there with me, what it's like to be an architect, what it's like to be a developer, what it's like to be a manager. So all that really played in nicely again to being like, okay, yeah, this is something I want to continue to do. And I just pushed myself from there where here in Utah, in this specific area, it's called Lehigh. And there's like a lot of tech companies that have kind of boomed over the last maybe 10, 15 years. So with that being said, that that time too, there were a lot of competing places right across the street. And so again, I think once I got my foot in the door, it seemed a lot easier to move around. And then also I got into tech right off the bat, which was nice. So all these other tech companies, right? I had like the applicable skills. I had like the know-how of building out a startup, like what it was going to be like if I got in there, how to be scrappy. So all that really, really played in nicely of my career path moving forward. And so I just followed that through. I really just kind of took the opportunities that came up. A lot of people will have like different opinions on that. But for me, I just decided any opportunity that comes up that I feel good about, I'm just going to take it. And so anytime that I had somebody reach out on LinkedIn, which building on LinkedIn really helped, people would reach out and yeah, I would take the interview just to hear them out. And especially when you're early on, most of the time it's like some kind of bump in your pay or a bump in the responsibility that you're going to take. And I also saw it as just like stepping stones of getting into different orgs. So that really helps me build my skill set, I think, quickly, get me like an idea of what the landscape would look like. And then I went from a couple startups into a public company. So I also had a mixed bag of, hey, this is what it's like to basically have no rules and just get in here and do whatever you want. Also working for a public company with like 30 plus people on our team, plus a consulting firm helping us do like a massive migration from Oracle to Salesforce. So at that company, it was like the complete opposite. It was like really slow, a lot of red tape, a lot of things we had to worry about, audits. So that one was like a really good check at that point in my career. I felt like to be like, okay, hey, yeah, you might be able to move this fast, but realistically, this is how we would have to build a scalable solution. This is what it's like to work with Q&A. This is what it's like to work with a bunch of stakeholders that are going to be involved in the project. So Yeah, I went through quite a few of those things before I finally ended up at my own decision of trying to go out on my own with a consulting firm. So I'd seen a few friends at this point do that. I felt like I had the skill set to do it. And I had some people start to reach out here or there. Nothing serious, but some people would reach out on LinkedIn through the DMs about doing a little side project or helping out with something with minimal hours. So that also kind of got me a little more interested in the idea, and also to make me feel like it was possible. It wasn't like I was just kind of shooting from the hip and just going to go for it. I'd already been introduced to it somewhat. So that helped me, you know, figure out the foundational things that I would need to do on my own if I were to do it. So yeah, at that point, I just decided it was probably the best move. I wanted to get back into business. I went to school for that. I went to the University of Houston, ended up dropping out, but I was going to University of Houston and studying entrepreneurship over there in their program, and had some awesome people that I met up with that had completed that course that I still talk to today that was really helpful. So I always wanted to go back down that path. I always wanted to try to be my own boss. So yeah, it just seemed timely at that time where I had the skill set now, I had the experience now, and I wasn't so shy about how I was going to go about and doing that. So it just really lined up. I felt like it was finally time to do it. And yeah, decided to kind of jump out of my full-time job and start my own thing.
Wow, what a journey. Question. I know some people hesitate about making that jump. At what point do you decide to go from full-time to part-time? Like when you find enough part-time gigs that matches what you're making full-time, or like, is it percentage? You're like, okay, let's just go for it. Like what amount of money or amount of jobs made you feel safe to leave that full-time role?
Yeah, this one was tricky because I've always been really open about what I've been able to make. And I ended up getting paid, I don't know, I honestly think that my last role I was maybe a little bit overpaid, in all honesty. I think they wanted me to kind of fit a different type of role than what they really tried to hire for. So I ended up not really matching up anyways. But my last role, I ended up with a salary of 165 plus stock options, and I was still considered a senior admin. So in my opinion, I hadn't seen anything else that high for that kind of title. That's like usually moving into architecture world. So that made me really nervous. That's why I'm bringing that up, because I hadn't really ever taken a step back at this point. And so, you know, I had a lot of pressure on myself of like, oh man, how am I going to match that kind of salary right off the bat? And I got into a difficult position over there because, like I'm saying, it just really wasn't lining up with where I was at my last job and really the responsibilities I was supposed to have and what I should be doing. And it just didn't seem like a really good match. Nothing wrong with the company or anything like that. It just didn't seem like the match for me. So it did force my hand a little bit. And just by happenstance, again, there was somebody that had reached out maybe like 3 months prior, and don't really know him super well, but there was a Salesforce AE that lives here in Utah. We've talked like a couple times, and he randomly had reached out like 2-3 months before and was like, hey, just sold this company. They're looking for a consultant. Thought of you. Would you be interested? Like, sure. What can hurt of this, right? So I took it on, and that helped get things ramped up and going. And so I had one already kind of, you know, ready to go, I guess you could say. And so talking with them, understanding their need, I knew that they needed at least 10 hours of work, if not 20. So I was like, okay, hey, like I could probably make this work even if I start off with like $100 an hour, right? And they were totally fine with that rate. So I got that going. And when that time came where it was getting kind of awkward at my full-time job and I knew it just wasn't going to be a match, I was either going to have to move to another job or I was going to have to move into my own thing. That made it a lot easier to make that switch. So I just went out, stopped the full-time job, went into this consulting thing. It was still a little scary because now it's like all on the table to be like, well, hopefully these guys don't drop me because I don't know how to find another client, right? Like these guys were just given to me. I didn't really look for it. It was just kind of like karma that came back a few years later. And so it was stressful that way. You're also losing insurance. You're also losing, you know, PTO, you're losing benefits, all these other things that come from a full-time job that's very, very nice and convenient. So all of that was also on the table. Again, my circumstance was a little different because my wife was working too. So she had insurance, she still had income. We had a good savings at this point. we don't have kids. We just have a dog. So it's like we've been saving and putting money away, right? So there was this nest egg that I had, and it gave me a little more, I guess you could say, courage to feel like, hey, if nothing else, you know, I could try this out for 6 months to a year or something, and we could still be fine living off of what we're still pulling in from my wife's income and the nest egg that we have built up. So that did help me out a lot. And then I would say the biggest thing is, like, if you do have a significant other, if you get their buy-in, that makes like all the difference, because in some degree it felt like, I don't want to let her down, right? I don't want to stress her out more. I don't want to put her in a position where it's going to cause more kind of issues between us or something. So it was, I think, a big, big thing on her end that when I decided to leave this job, she was the actual one that encouraged me from the get-go to be like, hey, you've always wanted to do this. Just try it out for, even if it's just a month, just try it for 30 days, see how this thing goes, go all in on how you would find more clients and how you would actually do this. And then that way you can at least see what it's like, see if you can actually make it work. So that was all the difference too, to have her buy in and then feel like, hey, I'm not going to stress anybody out. And this is going to be like my pet project in a way. And I think if you take a look at it that way, if you're in that stage, it makes it a lot easier to feel like it's more of like an experiment versus you have to make it work. If you look at it more of an experiment and just seeing what can come of this, if I took 30 days or I took 60 days to try it out and I tried my hardest, what can come of that, right? So I think that really helped take the pressure off and it got things going and, you know, started piecing together some old tactics, I guess you could say, from when I started a business before and how to be scrappy about finding customers and what I did before to find customers. So I started using a lot of those tactics again to be like, okay, this is the path I'm going to go. And it really worked out that way. So it was nice.
All right. I've got a lot of questions, but I guess I'll start with like one question instead of just reading off this list. I mean, so many questions from this, but I'm going to start with, I just want the audience to note, not that you can't listen to a podcast and make your own notes, but these are some things that I thought about that I think are super important from the coaching that we've done for freelancers and helping people advance in their careers. And one thing is that you had support, and you had support in the most meaningful spot, right? Like you had it at home. Not only did you have support, but you likely had accountability at home, and you had accountability for yourself, and you had a bit of pressure, but healthy pressure to be successful and try this out and give it a go. And like you said, even if you only give it 30, 60, 90 days, that's still a healthy pressure to keep you in line, right? It's like, I don't have forever. I don't have 5 years. I've got 60 days and I need to vet this thing and see if it's going to work, or I got to go back to work. And that's okay too, but I don't have a year to see if this is going to work. I've got 60 days to see if this is going to work. And I've got support at home and I've got things lined up for myself. You mentioned a few things. It was support at home is important. And if you don't have support at home, what I believe Jordan really had, and I had this as well when I was doing the cutover, and that was important to me that my spouse was on board with this decision and giving this thing a shot. And it's for all the best reasons, right? It's to improve your flexibility, to improve your income potential, to drive your future family to a place where they have options. Like, I think when you have a good relationship with your spouse and you're in a good position like that, the obvious thing to do is to go, yeah, 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 we got to try this. If we think we can do it, we got to try it, because it could put us in a really, really good spot. The other thing there is that if you don't have a spouse at home, or maybe they're not even on board, be sure to surround yourself with people who believe in this effort and believe in this mission that you're going on, instead of surrounding yourself with people who think it's too risky or think you're crazy for trying this, or why would you be successful when there's so many other consultancies out there? Like, go look at the list of AppExchange partners. Like, there's so many consultancies. How can you do it, right? There's a lot of things you can latch onto that will make you believe you can't do anything meaningful. So be sure to surround yourself with people who believe you can, because that is going to make a massive difference. The other thing, and again, I had this as well when I went through this cutover in 2016, and it was financial stability. And obviously that's a big deal. Now, some people are going to be potentially laid off or unemployed and go, you know what, I'm going to take this opportunity while I've got it, even though I'm not in the most financially stable position. I might have 30 days to try this thing out, or 60 days to try this thing out. But if you can be in that position, like we were in a position where we were thankfully involved in the financial independence community. And if you don't know what that is, then I would highly recommend check out the Choose FI podcast. That's Choose FI. I, Choose Financial Independence, and episode 100 is a really good place to start if you just want to get the foundations of what financial independence is. And the reason I bring that up is because we were saving about 50% of our income. And it sounds like you guys might have been similar because you could probably survive off of just one income in your household. And so when you're in that position, it allows a lot of this kind of flexibility. Now, not everybody's going to be in that position, but I would say if you want to have, maybe you're just trying to get into your first Salesforce job right now, well, go ahead and start thinking about what lifestyle choices might look like to lead to a position where maybe you could save 30% of your income and be in a position to make bold choices a couple of years from now. Just think about that before you get the new car and the new house and the vacation property and all the things. Consider what some meaningful, not saving 10%, but saving like 30% might mean. And I understand that's not possible for a lot of people. But if you think it might be possible for you, that can really help. So support and financial stability are going to be huge. All right. So I'm actually going to ask some questions, Jordan. So you mentioned that you got quote unquote lucky because you met this AE and they led you. You'd only met him a couple times, but I have a hard time believing anything's luck whenever these opportunities happen. Number one, you took the opportunity and you ran with it. You said, yes, how can I do it? I want to learn more. I want to get this thing done. I bet there are a ton of people who have had someone reach out and they don't even remember that moment because they said, not right now. And then it never led to anything, of course. So I'm wondering, how would you advise people to take what you would consider maybe a lucky or a fortunate opportunity and stack the odds in their favor to make that type of opportunity more consistently available? Like, how can others get that chance opportunity in front of them with more consistency?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I kind of said luck just because it's the quicker route and not having to go down that. But I definitely agree with you too. I think most of the time you create a lot of luck, right? I still think there's like maybe this word luck involved, but I think you can create a lot of it by just saying yes to opportunities that come your way, doing the right thing, trying to build relationships without trying to sell somebody. Right? Just doing things because you're genuinely trying to help. And that usually comes back around at an important time in your life, I feel like. So this one kind of bleeds back into another thing that I did in my life that I saw work really well. So I go to a church, and the church that I go to, they have you voluntarily, if you want, you can go out for 2 years of your life and talk about your beliefs with people. It's a really uncomfortable situation because you go out for 2 years and you're taken away from every distraction you have. And for the entire 2 years, 24/7, every single day, you have the exact same schedule. And the only thing you do is go out and talk about your beliefs with random people on the street. So I saw this happen a lot before in my life too. I think that's maybe what built that belief up, is you would talk to so many people every day. And like, obviously your goal at that time is trying to help people in their lives and get better and hoping that they will, you know, go to the church that we go to so that they can improve their lives. That's what we believe. So you talk to so many people, but I would have this happen a lot in that experience, right? I would talk to so many people and then whatever, you'd forget because you're talking to so many people every single day. And then someone would come out of the woodworks months later and be like, oh yeah, hey, you guys talked to me, you know, a year ago, or you guys talked to me X amount of months ago, and now I'm ready. Now I want to like actually make a change in my life. So I think that that piece over there really helped me understand that this luck side of things or building relationship side of things. And so going forward, if I were in the position of wanting to get into consulting, that's why I think building on LinkedIn is so huge. Like, you're sharing your thoughts every day. You never know who's reading it. You never know who is going through something similar that you have. And I get so many DMs that have validated that, that it makes it hard not to believe that. And then just kind of in case in point, what you mentioned here, talked with someone a couple of years ago, didn't think much of it, just tried to have a good conversation with the guy. And then a couple of years later, he reaches out with an awesome opportunity that really made a big impact in my life. He probably doesn't know that piece, but it made a huge impact on my life, right? Like, he was just probably just trying to throw something to help his client out, in all honesty, and thought of me because we had talked before. So I think that's a great way that you can go about doing it, is really try to go into like any relationship where you're not trying to just take from them, but build a genuine relationship with them so that they can help you out in the future.
I feel like I'm going to need a LinkedIn carousel of, one, how to befriend an AE, but two, how to build that relationship. Because it's weird when it's on the internet. It feels like not genuine when people just randomly like, oh, I'd love to connect with you, or like, help me get a job. Like, how do you kickstart like a genuine relationship with someone over the internet? Which I grew up in the 90s, so this sounds terrible. It reminds me of the days, was it ASL? When you go into the chat group, sorry for anyone who's younger and have no idea what I'm talking about. But yeah, what are some key, I guess, tips for building a genuine relationship with someone on the internet? I get it's easier in person because you get like the facial expressions and all that because it's in person, but I find it so difficult just online.
Yeah, no, that's a good question too. I think a good example with somebody that I've been able to do that a lot with is she's also in the ecosystem. And I feel like we've had a lot of things just come up as she shared things on social media. This is Megan Tuano. And I think we've had a lot of like similarities of like, you know, we've both been to Japan at this point, or like we both had gone through a similar career path with like the call center as our starting point. So as she shared those things, like I think a good example and a healthy balance between that is, you know, every now and then, it's not super often, but maybe like once a quarter, either me or her will just like randomly shoot a DM to one another based on like a post that was put out there. So, you know, like she put one out about Japan. And so like, okay, I've been there. It was awesome. I love traveling. So I'm not even going to like go to Megan and try to ask anything. I'm just genuinely checking in and just being like, how was the trip? How did you like it? What were the things that you went and saw? Like, what are some things that you would recommend doing if I do go back? And I think if you just approach it more that way, that helps a lot because it's more you are trying to like build a friendship versus trying to go in and actually get a job. I think in the long run, that really plays into, I'm hoping, right, that as I do that with other people, that they're there when I'm not around to like back me up on whatever I'm doing, right? So they're hopefully talking well of me, like when I'm not there, because we have built a relationship, or, you know, if questions do come up or whatever in the ecosystem, that they're there to be like, oh no, like met him, genuine guy, has really helped out, whatever. So that's, I think, what you're always trying to do. That's always kind of been the basing point of networking before the internet. When you'd go in person, that's the whole point of it. And so, yeah, it really is just actually trying to take interest in somebody. And I think like all of our relationships here too, I want to say are pretty similar to that as well. It's like, try to check in with you guys, try to see how you guys are doing, see how I can help you with your initiatives. And usually when I'm doing that, I'm always trying to go in with the mindset of like, doesn't matter if they can help me right now or not. Like, I'm just trying to see if I can help Anita or if I can help Brad and what I can do right now to be supportive that way. Because I know in the long run, if I do that enough, somebody eventually, when I need something, I can feel more comfortable to reach out to you, Anita, or Brad and be like, hey, you know, could I get help with this thing? Because I think at that point, you'd have a more real relationship. I think where people screw it up is they do that so quick, like what you're saying, like, you'll barely meet them and then they're already asking you for a job, or they're already asking you to review their resume, or, you know, something where it's like a kind of a big ask. And it's like, well, one, I don't really even know you. So it's kind of hard for me to recommend you because I don't know what you're good at. I don't know if you're a good worker. I don't know what you're interested in. So I don't even know really how I would do that in the first place. And then two is we don't really know each other. So it's just, it'd be really awkward in person. I know this gets used a lot as a cliche, but in person, if you just went up to somebody and said, hey, nice to meet you, Anita, can you get me a job at Salesforce? You'd be like, you wouldn't know what to say. It'd be awkward to say that, right? So I think that's weird that people do it online. They don't really think about what that would be like in person if you did that. So I think a better alternative, right, is just trying to get to know them first. And then from there, you can build this foundation and figure out how you guys can collaborate to make each other's lives better. And I would say that's the key point too, right? Like, you're trying to go in and be a mutual beneficial relationship. Like, it's not just, I'm going to be friends with Brad because Brad's going to help me, right? Or I'm going to be friends with Anita because Anita's going to help me. It's, I got to be able to help Anita so that she'll be able to help me, right? It has to go both ways. Otherwise, it doesn't ever work out, in my opinion. So you got to figure out how you can add value to that person too.
I like this. I feel like there's a theme here of, it's similar themes to what I see in mentorship. Like, recently we launched the Trailblazer mentorship platform. And if anybody wants to get a mentor or be a mentor, then just head over to trailblazermentorship.com and check that out. But what I'm seeing is this theme, and we heard from Kaylin Moss and Philip Weathers, who shared their mentorship experience story with us recently. And this theme is that when you give, you get. And again, to like Jordan said, there's these cliches that just sound like cliches, but there is a reality to a lot of them. And what they were basically talking about is that Kaylin, obviously being the mentor, is able to go out here and give, even being the person who you would say is, you know, on paper ahead in the game, right? But there's so much that Kaylin can learn from Philip, because Philip's got this big family unit and Philip is further along in life than Kaylin is. And there's a lot that Kaylin can learn from Philip. And what do you know? Philip's going to be a Salesforce professional and they're going to grow. And what do you know? Before long, you know, Kaylin will be 15 years into his career and Philip will only be 10 years into his career. But hey, that's pretty comparable once you start, you know, aging into the career path. And now you can benefit one another and there's going to be so many synergies. And I think that plays into quite a lot of, you know, sort of what you're talking about, Jordan, with this ability to come in and call it networking or call it relationship building or whatever you want to call it. But you're absolutely right in that you've got to come in and you've got to build that relationship like you would with anyone. Like if you were dating someone or met someone for the first time, you would ask them to go on a date or you would ask them, you know, for information so you could talk to them a little bit and get to know them. You wouldn't walk up and say, hey, will you marry me? This is going to be great. Like that's not how this works, right? And so you've got to give to get back and you've got to figure out, is there even a synergy here? Like you could come ask someone to recommend you for a job and then find out that their employer has no respect for them. Their employer is actually looking for the next excuse to get rid of them. And you've got them putting you in as a referral. Like you got to make sure that this is actually somebody you want to be networked with and you want to be aligned with from a professional perspective. So it's safer to obviously build the relationship up front. And I think across the board, you're going to see that when you build those meaningful relationships, it matters. And like Jordan said, long-term, like Jordan could pretty much ask me for anything at this point, because we have for years, been in each other's court and said, hey, if you need help, I'll help you out. Hey, if you want to take a call, I'll talk to you about whatever it is you're going through. And that's gone both ways. So at this point, he could say, hey, Brad, I need help with XYZ. And it might be 40 hours of my time. And I would take my time out to help him out because of that mutual respect and understanding in that relationship. So totally agree. And again, just going back to when you're giving, you're getting back. So don't be afraid to give a little bit, even if you don't feel like you have anything to give because you're so early in your career or you've never had a consultancy before, you've never been a freelancer before. All those things are going to catch up with you in a big way. And if you're going to spend time networking on LinkedIn and using social media as a professional outlet, then again, to Jordan's point, these little things that don't seem to matter, like just communicating with someone and doing something nice for them or just treating them well and being respectful or taking that 15-minute coffee chat, I can guarantee you that I did a lot of that early on when I was trying to build Talent Stacker even before. And it pays huge dividends to have people in your court when you're not there to defend yourself or you're not there to be in the conversation when the conversation starts to be about you. It is huge having people that are there for you instead of you having to be there yourself in person. So I would just say there are way, way, way more benefits to giving than I think you can see from the forefront. There's one thing I wanted to touch on, and it's that you mentioned earlier you thought maybe you were overpaid. I would disagree. I think that if you knew your own talent, we all like feel that, right? But you are definitely worth $165K to a business. But when you were converting over to freelancing or independent consulting or starting your own consultancy, whatever you want to call it, were you looking to replace the 165? Like, was that your, and I know the answer to this, but I want to hear your take. What was your performance indicator? Like, what were you looking for to say, okay, I've succeeded in my first 60 days? We were talking about that earlier. Like, I got to win in my first 60 days or I got to go back to work. What was a win in that context? And then also, if you don't mind talking through the mental space between you, you mentioned a few things like, oh, I'm losing PTO. Oh, I'm losing sick days. I'm losing 401ks or whatever else. What do you gain by owning a business? So were you looking to replace that 165K? What was the mental math? And then if you don't want to talk about it, I'll talk about it because it is very different earning paychecks into your business as an asset versus getting a paycheck and a W-2 at the end of the week.
Yeah, both really good questions. I actually appreciate you too correcting me on the not being worth 165, because one thing I've had to learn being a consultant that I didn't know how to do until I became a consultant was trying to figure out what you're solving in the business and how much money that's going to save the business. That's not something I feel like you really get taught in a full-time role. So you do get stuck in this idea of like, oh, I'm only worth 100 because that's what people get paid. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's what people pay. But the whole point as a consultant is you have to be smoother than that. You have to be able to go in and convince them not to go with the in-house guy. I shouldn't say convince, but you have to basically go in and do that work for them. I think the reason they hire in-house people is because somebody has already figured that out in the business of how much that person should be worth and how much they're going to provide as far as value. So they've already kind of done that. If they don't have that in place, I think that's a good place for the consultant. And that's honestly, in my opinion, what they're kind of looking for. So just a quick side note there, because yeah, now when I go in, it is literally me saying that, like, well, when I'm pricing a project, a lot of the time it's based on that. It's like, well, what are we talking about? What are we doing here for you? You know, because if I can save you guys $200,000 over the next year, even if you paid me 100 grand, you still make, you know, 50% that you're saving from that, right? And then obviously the ROI goes up from there. So that's a good correction. So thanks for saying that. And to your second point though, is if I wanted to replace that 165. So yeah, definitely, right? Like I had this definitely an ego thing, you could say. And then also like the pressure of like telling myself I can't go back and things like that, that are dumb now that I look at. But when I first started, yeah, a lot of that pressure was on myself. Nobody gave that to me. It was just my own self telling myself that. So there was some of that pressure that I did want to replace that. And so, you know, basically when I went into it, I don't know if this is exact math, but I think in my head, the number I had in mind was like, if I can make 10K a month, that's awesome. I don't know if that was before or after taxes because I didn't do the math before this podcast, but I think it was something around like 8K or so that I was getting. Maybe that's after tax from my full-time job, right? At the end of the day. So I was thinking to myself like, okay, if I can make 10 like by myself, yeah, I'm still going to have to pay taxes at the end of the year. But I also know owning a business, going into your second point, there's going to be stuff here in the US that I can now go speak to a tax advisor about and figure out how to make my lifestyle moving forward match up with things I can do in my business. So I like to travel as a good example. Cool. Well, now I can feel way more free to go to all of those Salesforce events that maybe I didn't want to before because that was post-tax money, right? That was, I got paid, I got taxed, and now I got to go find the funds to go fly out to San Francisco and book a hotel and flights. And well, now the cool piece is that's a business trip. I'm going out there to network. I'm doing a business thing. So it's not post-tax, it's pre-tax. And if I do that, I can write that off at the end of the year, right? So you start finding out a whole different lifestyle, and it has to take a big change of your mind of like how you view money and how you spend it, because you do it differently when you own a business, because you're now looking for opportunities to do that to fit your lifestyle. So your second point was, what is it like owning a business? What are you gaining? That's a huge gain right there, because in the networking space last year alone, going all in on that, I felt like I was able to finally meet a lot of people that I had networked with on LinkedIn. I was able to go see a lot of places I wanted to see. And I didn't have this guilt of like, oh, we got to find the funds afterwards. It's like, no, this is, if I don't do it, I'm just going to owe the government X amount anyways. So I might as well go do this thing, benefit from it, and meet people from it. So a big one, I know Brad and I, you have talked about this in the past outside of this, but you know, meeting up with a friend of mine in New York last year, Hassam, he was like a big proponent for me when I went into consulting. He was doing consulting, but in the Zendesk space, and just kind of the same situation about giving. And I had nothing to give him at the time and reached out. And he was so awesome to just literally take like an hour call with me and just tell me everything that he does as a consultant. Like, this is how I invoice. This is how I contract. This is how I structure deals. This is how I find a high ticket offer. This is how I go and try to scrum up work on Upwork. Like, he just went through his entire playbook for free. Nothing else. Like, even if I never talked with him again, he would have done it. He's just that awesome of a guy. So a big thing was like going out to New York and meeting him in person and being able to like buy a lunch for the guy finally or whatever, right? Like, and so since then, we've been able to stay in great contact and build a great relationship, great working relationship. And it's the same situation that Brad brought up earlier, like totally person outside of the Salesforce ecosystem that now I'm connected with on all these different opportunities that come up for both of us. So you gain a lot by being able to use your funds differently, to network differently. And as that comes in, I would say that is like, if you're ever interested in business, I think earning your own money is crazy that way too. Cause it just like, for me at least, unlocked a lot in my mind to be like, man, this is so weird that I can go on the internet, say that I know how to do something, and then find people that need that problem solved, and then they just pay me directly. That's like such a weird thing in my mind. And when you earn that money for your own, at least my experience was, it unlocked a lot of potential, I felt like, because now I was getting away from this idea of, if I want to make more, if I want to succeed, if I want to climb the corporate ladder, I have to play by all these rules, right? Like there's, you know, all these people I got to get to know, X, Y, Z. And there's rules on the consulting side in your own business, obviously. But for me, it felt more freeing. It just felt like I didn't have to play by the set rules that they told me to do it by. Like it was however I wanted to do it. So it's cool and freeing to be like, hey, I never liked this about my full-time job. I never liked that the businesses did this. I never liked that I was treated like this. When I hire employees, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to micromanage. I'm not going to make them feel like beneath what they should get paid or whatever. Like I want it to be transparent in this area. So it's cool that way that you get to start picking and choosing to be like, this is what I liked. This is what I didn't like. And I'm not going to do that. So I think that's really rewarding, and it may be to some, may not be, but at least for me, I loved that piece of it. So yeah, once you start going down that path and proving to yourself and building the confidence that you can earn money on your own, I think it makes it really challenging to try to want to go back, because then you're like, I know how to do this. Like I don't need somebody else to tell me how to do it. And now I have unmatched potential for myself. If I want to make more, it's on me, right? If I want to take more time off, it's on me. If I want to travel more, it's on me. So I love that. Maybe not everybody thrives in that environment, but for me, I love that. So for me, that was like all the reasons why I wanted to push to be on my own.
I think those are really great points and good things for people to consider if that thought process aligns with what they're looking for, or if maybe, you know, I think a lot of that talk track helps people see like, oh, you know, that doesn't really interest me. W-2 might be my thing, or man, that sounds amazing. Like I really want to go this path. I'm wondering, Jordan, because we've talked some offline about this, but do you happen to know off cuff about what the multiplier is if you were to sell a consulting company, like what the valuation like multiplier would be?
Yeah. So my friend Hassan that I just mentioned sold his, and he walked me through his process of how he did that. So that was really interesting. And I think he ended up selling his for 3 or 4 times of what he had earned for the year. So yeah. Let's just say hypothetically, he made 100,000. He could have sold that for 300,000 or 400,000 right there.
Yeah. So that's something I wanted to draw attention to. I appreciate that. Like a real world example of something that's happened recently. Right. And if you don't mind, one more question about, did you know about how many years he was in business before he sold?
I want to say it was like two or three. It was pretty short.
Yeah. Okay. So, and I know multipliers can get better with time, right? So if you were in business for 5 or 10 years, you'd been through ups and downs, you could get an even higher multiplier by showing that your company can weather storms. So what's really interesting to me is that, let's use $100,000, for instance. Let's say somebody makes $100,000 and they're looking to move into starting their own consultancy. And I know that sounds wild, but just think of it as trying to get your first client, first couple of clients. It's not this big thing with all the websites and the suits and you're at Dreamforce and you're shaking hands and you've got the booth and all the, like, no, it's none of that. It's basically think of yourself as a freelancer who calls yourself a consulting company. And when you get to that point, if you could replace that $100,000 income of your day job, most people on the surface would go, okay, so like, why would you quit your day job and all that stability to go from making $100,000 here to go work your butt off to make $100,000 there? Part of it is because, number one, there are massively high ceilings. Like how much are you going to make at the day job? $200,000? You could make a much higher ceiling owning your own business, right? Not to mention the freedoms. But on top of all that, let's say, like this example, you go work for that company, you make $100,000 this year. And let's just say for the sake of easy math, you make $100,000 for the next 3 years. You make $300,000, that's your W-2, you take it home. And then you go start your own business and you make $300,000, that's your profits, you take it home. But now when you sell that business and you get that 4x multiplier, suddenly they give you a bonus $400,000 on top of that to sell the company. And here you are in a position where instead of making $300,000, you made $700,000. There's a huge difference. And go do the math if your business accidentally made $150,000 or 200 or 300. And it gets wild compared to what could happen over here at your day job, right? So I'm not saying you should go take the risk. I'm not saying everybody's going to be interested in taking that risk because it is a risk. There's more responsibility. But if it interests you and you think this might be a path forward for you, I would not just say, hey, I make 100K now. I got to go make 100K over there. How am I going to make that happen? Because truth be told, you could likely make a few tens of thousands less every single year and still at the end of the day win on the end game. The other thing I wanted to point out is that healthcare and retirement plans, a lot of people think, oh, if I own my own business, it's going to be chaos to find these. Not true. Healthcare, yes, it's a premium, you know, but your company is paying that premium maybe for you, or not the premium, but the brunt of that cost for you by giving it to you. But I can tell you that the additional dollars you're going to make way, way, way offset that. And I would argue that retirement plans for business owners are much better, much more variety, much more options than whatever little thing your company lets you do. And they make you pick a fund and then they take 2% of everything out of it anyway for the fund managers and blah, blah, blah. Like, it's insane how screwed you're getting on a lot of these company retirement plans, even if they are matching. So I just wanted to point out a few caveats that healthcare and retirement, you can do it. And there is much more to the math than just saying, can I replace my income? Because there are a lot of other benefits, like we just mentioned. So, all right, I'm sorry I took over. I'll hand it back to you, Anita.
Yeah, no worries. It's just really cool to listen to both of you talk about it. I mean, for someone who's still working a W-2, there's just this invisible hurdle that just like completely blocks you to like make that move. And hearing it from people, oh, like, we've done it, it's not as bad. Like, I hear that. And then I'm going back realizing, you know, I had the same mindset when I first pivoted into a Salesforce role, like, oh, I can't do it. This is impossible. I mean, like, they said they can, so I'll try, like, I'll follow the steps and advice they said, and then I do it, and it worked. I don't know why, like, every time it's hard to get past that mindset, even though it has worked in the past. So I really appreciate you sharing lessons you've learned making the switch over. It sounds like the biggest one is networking and having friends in that lifestyle ready to give you advice. But were there any things, aside from the pricing yourself, were there any mistakes or like hard lessons you had to learn that might benefit some of the listeners out here when they're making that switch?
Yeah, definitely. I think a big one is not getting so wrapped up in pressuring yourself for the outcome. Brad mentioned this a little bit where all the goals seem really unobtainable in the beginning, even myself. And to your point, Anita, this happens every single time with me too. And it is funny because I've been trying to get better at like writing down times when I did something difficult and it worked out, because then I can look back on it and be like, yeah, this thing worked out, or I figured this thing out, and gives me that confidence to do it. I think what's so hard in the beginning stage, like you're mentioning, is you're just jumping into it and you have no proof, no validation that it's ever going to work out. Like, you haven't done it yet. So you're in this like tunnel basically. And you're like, I don't know. I don't know when the end of the tunnel is. Like, all I've been told is I just keep going. And I'm sure that's how people feel when they first get into Salesforce. Like you said, it's like, we're telling them, no, you'll do it. Like, just get on LinkedIn, do this, apply for jobs, do all these things. Right. And they're probably like, I've never done any of this, but they say it's going to work. I don't know when, but I'll do it. And so I think you go through that same thing because you obviously have to figure out all these new things, right? Like, how do I find clients? How do I structure deals? All that stuff. So you are in this tunnel, and I have that happen still today with different things I'm still trying to work on. One of them is like perfecting like how I get leads, how I consistently get leads. It's always worked out. So I've tried to do the same thing where I'm like, I've found them in the past, I've figured it out, but that still feels like a tunnel to me because I'm still trying to figure out that formula of like, what does it actually take? Like, what unlocks that thing for me? So that part is scary for sure. Looking back as the pressure thing though that I just mentioned, and Brad mentioned it too, is I could have been better at breaking down those goals a little bit more sizable. So instead of telling myself, I need to make 100K this year, or I need to make whatever the goal is, do the math to get it all the way back to your hourly rate of what you want to charge and how many clients that would take. That's much more sizable and easier to get yourself to believe it, I think. So instead of saying like my goal this year for what I want to earn, it's like, okay, at this new rate I have, I just need to find 3 clients. That's it. if I could find 3 clients for a year at this rate in my mind, then I'm going to hit my goal. Versus thinking of the actual money that I'm trying to make. When I go to that side, I'm like, it's never going to happen. No way I will ever make that. That's insane. But if I just think of it in 3, and then I think of like everybody that uses Salesforce, I'm like, I can't find 3. Like if I can't find 3, I got a problem, right? If I can't go find 3 clients at this price, there's a different set of problems to solve. That's not the issue. So that makes it a lot easier. So whatever the goal is when you first start, break it down into that. Just say, like Brad said, I just need to find 1. If I could find 1 at this rate, at this many hours, I'm good. There's my 100K. That's it. 1 person. That's all I got to do. So if that takes me a couple months to find them, so be it. Once I find them, I'll be able to make that money. So I think taking the pressure off, we mentioned it earlier of going back to like the experimenting type of idea. Don't think that it's like, I didn't get it this month. Oh man, I failed, right? It's you're experimenting, you're learning. You don't know how to do this. A lot of this is going to be new. So what you got to change your mind to is, I'm just trying to figure it out. What's working? What's not working? Okay, I've tried this experiment for this X amount of time. Did that work? No? Okay, let's switch it up. And this is really common too, and I still do it too for other things. But it goes back to that principle that we don't want to look foolish in front of other people, right? So a lot of the times we don't put in the effort because we don't want to fail in public. Same goes for something as simple as like LinkedIn content. I flop all the time on there because I'm always experimenting and nobody actually cares what I'm doing except me. I don't care if someone goes and looks at a post and is like, wow, Jordan's got all these followers and only got 20 likes. It's like, yeah, well, I'm trying something to try to figure out how to get more leads. So are you trying to find leads? Probably not. Like I am. So I need to figure out what works. So I'm willing to fail. I'm willing to figure out that post didn't get me any leads. Let's not do that one anymore. So you got to kind of go through that together. If I would have taken the pressure off of myself in the beginning with that, that probably would have made it so much easier because you, like you mentioned, Anita, too, to end this is to say you've done hard things in the past. You've figured things out in the past. Like you didn't know Salesforce, you got into the industry somehow. So you've been able to figure it out. It's the same kind of feeling that you're going to go through. And you just got to kind of trust in your gut of like, I've always figured it out. And also thinking of it as a formula. So the more I think of it as a formula, the easier in my mind that becomes to believe. Where I'm like, people do it. You put in X outputs and Y happens. Like something in there. I just don't know the formula. But if I figure this thing out, then I'm good. And that's all I'm trying to figure out right now. So that's what I'd say to end it. Try to take it that way.
Well, just wanted to thank you, Jordan, for taking the time to answer all our questions. You talked about your consultancy a few times. Do you want to tell the audience in case, you know, one of the listeners is interested in hiring you?
Yeah, for sure. So I tend to focus on my strong suit. So I was in tech for quite a while. So who I'm usually reaching out to is somebody that is a tech industry. So that's SaaS, financial industry, fintech, anything like that. And then it's typically somebody that is like raised some money, Series B, Series C, and usually making around 10 to 20 million ARR. Somewhere in that range, that's usually the businesses I work with. You can always go look at my LinkedIn profile. I publicly announce the people I work with. So if it's something in that realm, that's usually my strong suit and who I usually like to reach out to.
All right, awesome. So if you guys want to talk to Jordan, check him out on LinkedIn and head over to simple.salesforce.com. And I believe you can find information there and maybe even book a call with Jordan if it sounds like you would be an interesting person to work with for your business. On the Talent Stacker side, I would highly recommend grabbing the free Salesforce Career Accelerator Toolkit at talentstacker.com/CAP. And that's because number one, we will help you through step by step how to actually start your own freelancing, independent consultancy, and work your way towards being the type of expert that Jordan is today. And the beautiful thing is, Jordan is actually our freelance coach inside of the Career Accelerator program. So if you want to get advice from people like myself, people like Jordan, and many others who are there helping to coach and guide the next generation of Salesforce talent, be sure to head over there again, talentstacker.com/CAP. Thanks for listening and be sure to subscribe on whichever platform you're listening on. We really appreciate it and leave us a 5-star review if you've got the time and we will catch you on the next episode. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us today. To get started for free on your own Salesforce career, go to talentstacker.com/start. or check the show notes. There you'll find all the resources you need to start earning $60,000 to $80,000 in as little as 8 months, no matter your education or career background. The Salesforce for Everyone podcast was produced by Edmund T. and engineered by Andrew Mendonza. If you like what we do at this scrappy can-do podcast, please help others find us by leaving a 5-star rating and a great review on whichever platform you're listening to us right now. See you next time.